You get yourself checked on tomorrow. My goodness, thank you, Sam. Band, wow. Okay, what do I do now? I want to share with you today, pregnant with possibilities. It's a Papa Charlie quote. And I told Bev the humor of that didn't go by me, that right after Valentine's Day, I'm preaching a sermon about pregnant with possibilities. Do with that what you will. Papa Charlie says in Christian Healing, divine ideas are our inheritance. They are pregnant with possibility, pregnant with all possibility, because ideas are the foundation and cause of all that we desire. With this understanding as a foundation, we easily perceive how all mine are thine. All the ideas contained in the one Father mind are at the mental command of its offspring. Get behind a thing into the mental realm where it exists as an inexhaustible idea, and you can draw upon it perpetually and never deplete the source. Again, divine ideas are our inheritance. They are pregnant with all possibility. Bev and I were in Atlanta, Georgia last week. Unfortunately, it was rainy and cold there the whole time we were there. So we were very glad to get back home. But it was a Unity Ministers meeting that happens every year about this time. And we had a great time being with our friends and seeing people we haven't seen since last year at this time. But one of the things that we did a couple things that were significant. One was we went to the Jimmy Carter Center, which was really, really interesting and moving. If you have a chance, I'd encourage you to do that. And of course, the other, we went to the Martin Luther King Jr. Center as well. And that was such an incredible experience to hear. Once again, we'll see the video of his I Have a Dream speech. And I'm standing there, tears streaming down my face, listening to this speech. And my heart hurt so as I watched some of the video clips of the newsreels back then. The hate that was in the air and all the things that happened and the horrible actions that were taken against the civil rights workers and those who were working toward that. So the whole experience was incredibly moving, and I thought it was quite appropriate and important for us to take some time to honor Black History Month. Now, one thing I want to mention is that we're very concerned about being politically correct. And actually today, I'm not sure what is politically correct anymore. I remembered a scene out of the movie Biko about Stephen Biko, who was an anti-apartheid worker in South Africa. And one of the many times he was brought into court and being examined, the judge said to him, "Why do you call yourself black? You are more brown than black." And his response, in a very non-confrontational kind of way, I said, "Why do you call yourself white? You are more pink than white." So the labels that we use are incredibly subjective, and I have for some long time used the word black for African Americans because I've had people say to me, "I'm not from Africa, so don't call me an African American." And I use black with the utmost respect and care, so that's where I'm coming from, and I hope that doesn't push anybody's buttons, and particularly since we call it Black History Month. I read probably 100 small bios of some of the great black heroes of the past, and I want to share several of them with you. The first one is about James Armistead. He was a patriot spy. He was actually a slave who had been given permission by his owner to go and be an agent for the government. He is actually a double agent. He was working for the British and for the Americans, but he was giving the British inaccurate information and bringing accurate information back to the Americans. And as the story goes, he found out that the British were bringing in a flotilla into Yorktown, Virginia, bringing in 10,000 troops. And he passed that information along to George Washington, and Washington and those with him were able to blockade the city and to stifle that British influence, that influx. And because of that, the war ended very shortly after that. So this black man, a slave at the time, was credited with the large responsibility for bringing the war to an end when it did. No small thing. Eunice Hutton Carter was able to become a social worker, then went on to be the first black woman to obtain a law degree in the United States. She was very concerned about the crime in New York City, and particularly around prostitution, and she worked in that area. And she was largely responsible for bringing down the crime boss, Charles Lucky Luciano. And because of her work, he was arrested and eventually deported, gotten out of the United States. Rebecca Lee Crumpler, she was the first black woman to receive a medical degree in the United States. And she was mostly concerned about the health concerns of freed black slaves. She was also the first black woman, black doctor, to write a book about the Book of Medical Discourses. It was the first writing by a black doctor. She did very well with that. Solomon Carter Fuller, he was the nation's first black psychiatrist, and he worked with Alzheimer's. How many of you know that Alzheimer's, the name Alzheimer's, was a German doctor who first discovered this disorder that we call Alzheimer's and thus named for him or by about him? Did anybody know that? I didn't know that till I was doing this research. But Dr. Fuller got very much involved in the Alzheimer's work, and he also became an expert, a teacher, and practitioner of neuropathology. Frederick Jones was a self-educated man. He was an entrepreneur, he was an inventor, he was a fabricator, and he invented air conditioning for cars. And later he modified that to put it on trucks so that food and medicine could be hauled in a refrigerated enclosure and keep it fresh. His work eventually resulted in the company that we now know to be Thermo King. So if you've ever seen that logo on a refrigerated truck when it comes by, that was his doings. He also got more than 60 patents for his inventions, uneducated or self-educated. And last of all, Maggie Walker. She was the daughter of slaves, and she was quite the entrepreneur and financier, even as a young girl. She started the St. Luke Penny Savings Bank in the area where she lived when there were no black banks at the time at all. And she began to gather money. She opened the bank with $9,000 that she had managed to get together. And she was making loans to the people who couldn't get loans from the other banks and turned it into a huge business, a huge bank. She was the first woman of any race to preside over a savings institution. And she continued to be a philanthropist and eventually held positions with the NAACP and the National Urban League. And I could go on and on. Amazing stories about the first woman who did something, the first black man or woman that did something, and the incredible things that they did that we have been blessed by. And most of the time this is in the background. We don't even know all of this has gone on. Well, let's take another step and look at the contributions of blacks in New Thought. Now, with religion, we know that there have been some great and powerful black preachers along the way, and a lot of very strong churches. But as far as New Thought goes, some of the names you might hear along the way are Ruth Cox, James Eliot, Henrietta Gordon, Courtney Johnson, Helen Mouton, Corinne Smith, and Frieda Ann Whitfield. Now, one of the things that I was struck by, I kind of knew this anyway, but I was looking through some of this history doing the research, and most of the New Thought ministers are women. The last statistic I saw, which has been quite a number of years ago, 51% of Unity ministers are women. And I suspect it's even more now at this point. From what I can tell, going to meetings and looking out over the gathering of ministers. But some of the other Unity ministers you might be more familiar with may have heard their names. One is Johnny Coleman. She founded the Christ Universal Temple and the Universal Foundation for Better Living. Also, the Johnny Coleman Theological Seminary is named in her honor. You may have heard of Ruth Mosley from Detroit, who started the Unity Urban Ministerial School, which is now one of the paths that someone can follow if they want to be a Unity minister, is going through the urban school. And Ruth passed away a while back, but she left an incredible legacy behind her. And then, of course, there's Barbara King. She is a powerful woman. She is a big woman. I mean, tall, large, stand statue. In not only physically but otherwise, she has an incredible presence about her. She's the minister and founder of the Hillside Chapel and Truth Center in Atlanta, and also the founder and president of the Barbara King School of Ministry, which was opened in 1971. Now, during Black History Month, we take time to remember and honor and celebrate the lives of these people who have been so important. And while it is important for us to honor them and to recognize them, I think there's something else that's more important, and that is that we imitate them, that we follow them along the paths that they have walked. Now, in my studies, I found that all these black heroes that we've talked about and I studied about came from a large variety of backgrounds. The patriot spy I mentioned a moment ago was a slave while he was doing that. There are others who are one generation moved from slavery, and others two generations, and some had no connection with slavery at all. Some of them came from very, very, very poor circumstances. Some of them were orphans. Some had a single parent. Some were raised by grandparents or aunts or uncles or someone else. Some grew up in affluent homes. Martin Luther King Jr. grew up in an upper middle class neighborhood in Atlanta. And we saw the house that he was born in and grew up in, and in a nice neighborhood. So all these stories don't begin with, are not rags to riches or poverty to prosperity. Some of them had good families, strong families, solid families, and lived a very financially secure life. So there's a great difference there. So there's a huge variety of the situations from which these people came, and a huge variety of things that they did. Some of these black heroes were in the field of education, some in the field of medicine, some in engineering, some in finance, the arts, and music, and sports. And right on down the line, we find these black heroes showing up all over the place. So even though their backgrounds were different and what they did was different, they had one thing in common. I think they all, as Papa Charlie did, realized that the world was pregnant with possibilities. They saw the possibilities that were there. So if we're going to imitate them, I want to suggest to you three steps that we can take to imitate those who have gone before and have done something with the opportunities that are all around us. The first one is perception. How do you see what the world is? I asked somebody one time, "How are you doing?" And he said, "Same old stuff, day after day." And I thought, bless your heart, to live like that? And you know, you've heard of you can either wake up in the morning and say, "Oh Lord, morning," or you can say, "Good morning, Lord." It's a choice. It's how you perceive it. And it begins with a willingness to see the world in a different way. There's plenty in the world that would point us toward the negative. And we all can find a lot of reasons to be negative, to ever feel negative, or to act negative, or to see things as negative. But it is critical for us, if we are going to be a part of the pregnant possibilities in this world, that we are willing to perceive the world in a different way, to see it as full of possibilities that carry blessing for us, that carry prosperity, that carry abundance, that carry healing, and all the things that we're looking for. It begins with how you look at it. And that has nothing to do with your circumstances. As we've seen in the stories, some people from dire circumstances, from abject poverty, were still able to see the possibilities and to do something about it. So it begins with that point. It begins with your and my decision, our choice to see things differently, to be willing to see things differently. Because when the good comes along, it challenges us. And it's an adjustment to be able to do that. There's this idea in Unity, in New Thought, I'm not sure who first came up with the idea, called chemicalization. And some of you have been in Unity classes have heard that. But chemicalization is the process that happens within you when an old idea is confronted by a new idea. You grow up believing that you don't deserve good. And then somebody gets up and says to you, you deserve all the good in the world. And when this old idea of you don't deserve it comes in contact with the idea that you do deserve it, what happens? So every time you think that negative idea and then you bring the positive up, there's a clash there. So I'm not telling you that perceiving the opportunity that is all around us is just a snap. Just do it. No problem. Well, you can do it and you can choose to do it, and I encourage you to do that. But realize that there's something that goes along with that. There's a change that goes on within us, and that change is as intense as your need to hold on to the old is. Because when the new comes and brings a new idea, a new way of looking at things, the more you hold on to the old, the more conflict you're going to have until you... One possibility is to release the new and just live with the old. I've seen that happen too. But it is our choice as to how we're going to perceive this world pregnant with possibilities. And I would encourage you to say yes, to be willing to look at the new, despite the fact that it makes us uncomfortable, despite the fact that the new often drags us out of our comfort zone. It drags us out of our rut. You've heard about people being in a rut. You know what a rut is? It's a grave with both ends knocked out of it. Think about that one. So the first step for us is perceiving, seeing, recognizing, acknowledging that the world indeed is pregnant with possibility. The second step is to conceive. That is to imagine it, to play it out. You began by saying, yes, all right, I will accept the fact that the world is pregnant with possibility. The second step is, I can imagine that possibility being mine. I can imagine how that would play out in my life. If I were to really embrace this opportunity, I can see how that could happen. I can really see it happening. That's important for us to do as well. The affirmation that we have for this month has imagination in it. What is the affirmation? My imagination swings wide the gate of possibility. So we envision that possibility being in my life. We imagine those possibilities playing out in our life. It's important that we're able to do that. Reminds me of a story. You know why the blind man turned down the new job offer? I did that wrong. The invisible man. You know why the invisible man turned down the job offer? He just couldn't see himself doing it. Okay, put that one in the don't do again pile. But that illustrates the point of how important it is for us not only to say, okay, there are great opportunities out in the world, and taking another step and saying, I can imagine, I can envision those possibilities playing out in my life. If your concern is for a relationship, can you imagine the relationship happening, or are you at the place that, oh, there are relationships out there, but never take that step of say, envisioning how that plays out in your life. So that step of conception, envisioning, is important for us if we're going to manifest these things. And the third step is to receive. Not only perceive and conceive, but receive. We accept our marching orders. Because when we say the possibilities, the opportunities are out there, and I can envision that being in my life, and by God, I'm going to do it now. We receive that this is mine now. We receive the encouragement, the urge from within us to do what we have envisioned, to do what we have imagined. Not only do these possibilities exist out there somewhere, but I can see them in my life, and now is the time, and now is the place to make those things happen. Sounds kind of like the fifth principle of unity. Now, things happen. We make them happen. We express them. And all that we know comes to the place of being pushed out into the world and manifested. That's what happened to our great black heroes. Not a one of those that I read about did I tell you. And they had this great idea and they sat around thinking about it. They had this great idea and they waited for somebody else to do it. They saw the opportunity, the possibility. They saw themselves in that possibility and they claimed it and said, this is what I am going to do. This is what I am doing. And everything started out that way. All the great accomplishments that these black leaders made started out as that idea, started out as a possibility. And so is it with us. Sounds a little bit like the creative process, doesn't it? Mind, idea, expression. We have that possibility in front of us. We imagine it being ours, and then we make it ours, and we express it. And some of you think because your ideas aren't big, they aren't valuable. Doesn't matter how big it is, if it's yours. For your life, it is important. And it's all relative. Because if you do something, it's like preaching. And I really do believe that if a sermon touches one person, that's great. That's good. It was worth doing the sermon for one person. If a sermon touches 1,000 people, that's great too. But that does not make a sermon touching one any less important. And whatever idea you have, whatever opportunity you latch onto and you own and you envision and you activate and you energize and you make something happen, it does not matter how big or how small it is. It does not matter how many people know about it. It's important. What matters is that you do it. What matters is that you follow through what is going on in here. That you see that opportunity, that possibility. You claim it, you own it, you make it happen. That's what all the heroes of the past have done. And we would do well to do that as well. So during this rest of this month, as we continue to think about opportunity, next week I'm going to be sharing with you about creating opportunities. But this week I would invite you just to look around as you go out into the world. Carry that phrase with you. The world is pregnant with possibilities. And you begin to perceive those possibilities. And then you begin to conceive those possibilities. And then you begin to receive those possibilities. And you make it happen. I dare you. God bless you.
And now at this time, we have our offering that is taken. And although it seems like it is for us, and of course it is, there's funds that come in here that help us with our operation, this time is really for you. It's really for you to consider what your choices are about how you live your life, where you place your values. How important is it to get Starbucks coffee every morning? And how does that weigh with how important Unity of Pompano Beach is to you? There's so much here that you can be involved with. Of course, through attendance and through financial giving, but through service and just coming out to our various activities. For those of you on live stream, we invite you to take a look at those podcasts and the various things you can do with us online, and there will be more this year that we're going to share with. There's a donate button there. Anybody on live stream can give your offering that way. If you're here today without cash or a checkbook, use that donate button on our website. But do be involved, because it's the involvement and the willingness to give and be involved that really does create that joy within. So let us hold our gift today as we are filled with gratitude for each person here. And we bless our offerings together. With a grateful heart, we acknowledge God as source of all that is. Today, we let go of any concern of lack and allow good to unfold in our lives. Good is ours. Good and more good is ours. An ever-increasing good is ours. Everywhere we go, we see this good. We feel it. We experience it. We give it. And it multiplies itself around us. And so it is. Amen.